when disaster strikes. Will you be ready?
Good evening, and we begin tonight with the monster hurricane and its deadly impact already.
When all hope is gone, will the government be there for you? If you're looking for ways to take your prepping to the next level, then you've come to the right place. Broadcasting from a secure and well-prepared location, it's time for Prepping 2.0. And now, please welcome authors Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher.
Welcome, everyone. This is Shelby Gallagher over here at Prepping 2.0. Welcome. Thanks for tuning in this week. I want to introduce my co-host on the show as well as in life, Glenn Tate. Good morning, Glenn.
Good morning, Shelby. Oh, this is great. You know why we're so excited this morning? Besides the fact that you are ripped on caffeine right now. There's that.
And a little bit of like stress and adrenaline.
Yeah. And why is that?
Because
we just moved into our new studio. That's right. Patreon supporters have been great. We have now a dedicated studio. I don't want people to think, though, like Patreons.
Oh, no, we're in a 12-story building overlooking the Puget Sound.
No. What we're doing is it's a strip mall kind of thing with peeling paint, and there's a tattoo parlor next to us. And I just, before the show, went in and used the restroom, and I had to fix the toilet. So if anyone's thinking that we're wasting your money on high-end rent, we're not. But you know what? This is kind of cool because this works for us. And we wanted to upgrade the sound quality. You're going to see some more as we roll out close to episode 100, and it'll culminate in episode 100. You're going to see more and more production upgrades. We have the most amazing producer ever, and he has taken us under his wing, and he's like, here's how you do a Joe Rogan style podcast. And we're like, heck yeah.
Well,
and
radio show.
Radio show too. That's right. I always talk about a podcast, but we do have a pretty legit radio show that's on a lot of stations.
So what we've just discovered, what we're saying is we've exchanged the sound of our chickens in the background for the sound of the creaking door of the tattoo parlor.
If you hear kind of a buzzing thing and people wincing out in pain, that's because they're getting tattoos. And so it's a magical sound. Well, okay, enough of that. The topic we're going to talk about is a great one. 10 reasons why the upcoming winter will have worse food shortages than the spring. And is this just Glenn and Shelby like looking in a crystal ball? No, we're amateurs, right? We predicted a lot of stuff, big whoop, but we're amateurs. We have Dan, the food industry CEO, who you've probably heard in episode 77. You probably heard a short update of his in episode 94, 95. Now it's another full show with Dan because you guys have said, I want to hear more from Dan. Because see, Dan sees stuff weeks, months, whatever in advance, because the stuff on your shelves was somewhere else 6 months ago, and it was probably at his company's warehouse and being maybe shipped by friends of his in the trucking industry. So he has the over the horizon look, and he has predicted amazing things. We'll get into all this in detail, but I just want to let you know you've asked for it and you've got it. More Dan, the food industry CEO guy. And then, of course, we're going to have Patreon questions at the end. We have some amazing Patreon questions. We'll get into that. That'll be in the after show. I said the end. I meant in the after show, which is available to Patreons.
So the next thing that we always like to talk about every week, and I think it's very appropriate, is the top 100 things that go quickest, fastest in a collapse. You can find this at our website at prepping2-0.com in the lower right-hand corner. Really, I love this list. I talk about it all the time. I think it's a great shopping list, a great list to checklist to prep off of. We're on number 79 as we get ready to talk about winter. Mm-hmm. Number 79 is woolen clothing, scarves, earmuffs, mittens.
Why wool?
Shelby? Because it is incredibly, incredibly warm. Why can you still go out and buy wool clothing? Because there's nothing that can match it. It is incredibly, incredibly warm when you layer it, especially with something else.
Even when it gets wet here in Western Washington, that's a deal. That's a thing. And it rains other places in the world apparently too, so it might
be
important.
And it's incredibly thin.
Yeah.
You can get a warm down blanket and it's going to be huge, fluffy, and large. A thin wool blanket will keep you crazy warm. There's nothing like it. Army wool blankets, if you have one, keep it.
They're the best. Speaking of army blankets, I remember some documentary about the first Civil War, and it's sad that I even need to say the first. But anyway, the first Civil War, bunch of troops. It was summertime and they were issued blankets and they were like throwing them away because they're like, hey, these are heavy. We don't need these. And then the winter came and they were either freezing to death or, you know, gangrene and all the other stuff. The point being, like, as I look out the window here and I see some drug deals happening in the parking lot. No, I'm kidding. That's not happening. But as I look out the window, it's sunny and bright and beautiful. It is the end of September. The weather's perfect, 72 degrees. And as everybody knows, that ain't going to last. Nope. And so just like prepping is really planning when you get down to it, plan for the winter, have all that extra stuff. And you're saying to yourself, oh, I have enough outdoor clothing and mittens and stuff. I bet you do. You're going to have guests. You're going to have a lot of people, and you're going to be able to, if you have this stuff, be able to help people, be charitable. And they're going to be more important, these items, than you think they are right now. And scarce. And they're going to go really, really quick. Don't think when your city's burning down, you're going to go to Goodwill and get some cheap mittens.
Well, and let me throw this out as we kind of delve into the topic with Dan today. I think we all need to switch our thinking a little bit, that as winter comes and there's going to be food shortages, we know that. That's what we're going to talk about today. There's going to be winter clothing shortages. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to see that a little bit, maybe not to the extent that we're seeing food and ammo and all that. But I think people are going to kind of stock up a little bit more than they would. And this is the time of year when all that stuff gets kind of pulled out and put out on the shelves by all the retailers. So
you made a fine point. And so many times we've joked about it, but it's true. We will be recording a show
and then ideas
come and we connect dots. And you mentioned, you know, they're going to become scarce. So many things in this country have become scarce and are becoming more scarce because people are waking the heck up.
And getting prepped.
Guns are gone. Ammo's gone. Freezers, canning supplies. I would add things like winter clothing to this. And so if you as a prepper, let's say you've been doing this a number of years, or even if you're prepping 1.0, which we love and appreciate, by the way, we
know you're listening. Yeah, we know you're listening. Yes.
If you said, well, hey, there's normally this stuff, whatever the stuff is, and it's normally here because it's normally here, right? Don't have normalcy bias and assume it's going to be here. We actually were doing some deep statistical analysis last night in a hot tub. And we came up, I do my best thinking in a hot tub, and we came
Her
up with
best
this.
Relaxing.
We did the numbers. We figure, total made up speculation, guessing, about 10 million people have figured out what's going on. And our number for that comes from the fact that in July, there were 8 million guns sold, 4 million of which were to first-time gun buyers. So we figured 4 million new gun buyers. We some formula that doesn't make any sense right now because we're not in a hot tub and stuff doesn't make nearly as much sense right now. But there are like 10 million people.
But that meant 4 million were people who are already preppers. So if you have 4 million that are new to prepping and probably buying their first firearm, let's just double that.
Yeah. So the point is there all these people now who are entering the hoarding game? And we're kidding. We hate the term hoarding, but you know what I mean? I know. But there are millions of people now that are going to start figuring stuff out. And the winter mittens that used to be there are not going to be there. And so you got to, we always say it, Shelby and I struggle with this too, lose the normalcy bias. And this is a perfect example of that, don't you think?
Oh, I absolutely agree. So we have some awesome sponsors.
We do. Here we go. Yeah. Folks can go to www.prepping2-0.com and click on Friends and Affiliates. We have all the links and all the coupon codes. We like to mention those folks. EMP Shield. They make a device that once you wire it into whatever it is, it can protect it from an EMP, great for generators and car batteries.
Or that other thing that's natural, that's an, what is it, a cosmic?
Oh, yeah, CME, a coronal mass ejection.
Yeah, from there the sun. We almost had one a week ago.
Yeah.
So that's
a real thing.
That's a big deal.
They happen.
Yeah.
Numana, freeze-dried foods in large portions, long-term storage. Backwoods Home. They are a great magazine. We've been readers for a long time. And our new sponsor that we love so much, Minutemen, plural, Minutemen Coffee, the I Miss America blend. We were talking to Dan before he came on the show, and he said he went to order some, and it's gone. But by the time you hear it, it's probably going to be restocked. It's a huge thing. It's a bag of awesome coffee that is branded, logoed. The bags look so cool, don't they?
They do.
It says, I Miss America. And it's like, oh, what are you drinking? The I Miss America blend. You're going to impress people
and
with that.
Good. And it's good. I'm going to tell you, oh my gosh, it's a treat.
Yeah, she's quite the connoisseur. That's the nice word for it. Yes, dear. What's next?
The next is our great Patreon supporters. And just want to let you guys know, thank you so much for your support. It keeps this show on the air, but it also helps us do these kind of really budget-friendly upgrades that keep us going. So you can start your support at $2 a month. Patreons get exclusive access to our after show, which is going to be
spectacular.
Vibrant today. Yes. You can ask us and our guests questions, and you get lots of free merch and free goodies and previews to things. And And we joke about it, but it's very true. Our Patreons have become the steering committee of Prepping 2.0. They give us great ideas. There's a great community that happens over there. So you can find that if you go to prepping2-0.com and click on the Patreon logo and join. And you can start at $2 a month and go from there. And
lurkers come out of the shadows. And what we mean by that is there are all kinds of folks that listen to the regular show, including radio. They listen to it on YouTube. It had a tremendous number of downloads this week on YouTube, which was awesome. And they listen to it on their other things, iTunes, blah, blah, blah. And then the show ends at 52 minutes. And there's more to it than that. And there's the after show, which is probably the main reason to become a Patreon. And so many people just listen to the regular show. And then they join as Patreons. They listen to the after show. And they get to ask questions. They're like, oh, my goodness, there's so much more to this show. And that's why I say lurkers come out of the shadow. So please do so. Well, I wanted to do a shout out to, and this is a thing where we're going to start doing, where we mention a podcast, a YouTube channel, something like that, that we like, and we get a lot out of. And one I've been watching a lot lately is Ethical Preparedness. And as the name implies, it's not just preparedness, but it's, you know, doing it the right way, the ethical way. And the guy who does it is a law enforcement officer who's got a lot of interesting background. He did a great one on why just relying on bushcraft skills will get you killed, which I thought was good. He just did one on what happens if you shoot somebody in self-defense with old Kenosha Kyle and all of that, and what happens to your gun. So it's really a good thing. So Ethical Preparedness, highly recommend, and I'm going to have a link to it in the show notes.
Wonderful. So let's get right into it. Dan, the food executive, we've had him on the show before, as Glenn mentioned. And just to refresh, we had him on back in April, and he really, really let us know about the upcoming protein shortage. When you say protein, we mean beef and chicken. And I'll tell you what, a lot of people emailed us and said, thank you so much. Because of that, I was able to get some extra stockpiling done and order some beef. And we did, too. I'm not going to lie. I ordered a half of beef. I have another one coming in November, which seems really timely.
Yeah.
It's just the butchering season, but that's how that worked. And so we also had him on a couple of weeks ago. We talked about the packaging shortage and how that packaging shortage is going to lead to food shortages, because if they can't package it and get it on the shelves to us, it's a problem. So, but we want to have him on again and really do a deeper dive. And Dan he's going to talk to us about these top 10 reasons why this winter is going to be
worse
than last spring in terms of shortages. So also want to talk with him about a storm that hit the Midwest that knocked out 10 million acres of corn.
Goodness.
So Dan, what the heck happened to all that corn? Talk to us.
Hey, Glenn. Hey, Shelby. Well, what happened to it is it's flat on the ground.
Oh, wow.
It was a derecho, however you want to pronounce it, that went through Iowa, took out approximately 10 million acres of corn, did some damage to the soybeans there, and took out a lot of storage as well. Something like 60 grain elevators were damaged.
Wow.
So when that went through, a lot of uncertainty as to the effect that that's going to have. But just, I wanted to give a bit of perspective on that. There's a lot of misinformation on the internet about that. So what that took out was approximately 7, maybe 8% of the total corn that the U.S. produces, and a smaller percentage of the soybean. So that it did a pretty good job, but it took out a smaller percentage than what we feared initially. So some of the initial reports that y'all may have seen on the internet was, you know, 20%, 30%. It's going to end up being 7 to 8%. Loss of corn. Now, it did take out some high quality corn, which is a problem, which means that, you know, human quality corn is what was more hurt than feed quality corn. At this point, though, we're looking at near record production for corn everywhere else. So in the end, I think we're going to end up having maybe a year of 3 to 4% down, not something catastrophic like 20 to 30%, but you could see some increasing prices in feed, animal feed specifically. So that's a good topic to start with, because there's a lot of misinformation about that out there right now.
So I have a secondary question, and feel free to keep this short, because it's going to, there could probably be a whole nother show. So I understand from, I'm thinking about what President Trump said this week, as well as what I've heard on another podcast, is that there was a huge flood in China, and China has just made the largest order of corn and soybean to the United States twice in the last few weeks. So they are going to take some of, we're going to sell them some of our corn and soybeans. Is that going to have any effect? And again, I want to get into your top 10 list more than anything, but I just want to see if that catastrophe on the other side of the country, world, excuse me, is going to have an effect on us.
Sure. Yeah. And that's actually one of my 10 items.
There you go.
Okay. Yeah. Short and sweet. Yes, it is going to have an effect, and we'll get into the details later.
Awesome. Awesome. So yeah, let's go. Are we starting at 1 or 10? Let's go.
Sure. Let's take it from the top at number one. Let me give you a little bit of background, just for 60 seconds, as to why I came up with this top 10 list. So I was on yet another conference call with industry leaders a couple of weeks ago, so mid-August or so. And the gentleman that was leading the call was a top analyst at a highly respected research firm here in the United States, especially when it comes to the food industry, grocery, things like that. And at the end of this hour-long discussion that he led, he issued a statement that really stuck with me, and it was right at the end, so he didn't give a ton of detail. But what he said is, this is a rough quote, by the way. He said, "I want everyone to know that according to our research, everything we've seen so far in the food industry is COVID light compared to what the fourth quarter 2020 is going to look like. Everything that broke before is going to break 10 times worse this winter."
Wow.
Wow. That's, pause for effect there.
That was his statement. And he ended the call with that. Great job.
Nice.
That's what he ended the call with. So after the call, I just sat there for a minute and thought, okay, 10 times that, we're talking 299 days shortages times like four, if that assessment is valid. And this firm is highly, highly respected in U.S. retail. So I went out to do some research. How bad is it going to be this winter? I would not say 10 times a spring. 10 times a spring is, there is no food in any grocery store for 3 to 4 months, in my opinion. I don't think that's what we're looking at. But I can see a clear path to the winter having double, maybe triple the shortages that we saw in the spring. So that's what led to this research that I did, the calling of the contacts that I have, et cetera, that led to this top 10. So the first one is something that we probably won't talk about too much because we mentioned it in the past in the segment update that I did a few weeks ago, and that's the massive shortages in packaging. That is my number one concern right now. It's real. It's happening. It's already baked in, where even if things went back to normal today, the time it takes to produce, ship, receive, and use that packaging is already pushing us out 4 to 6 months. So the packaging shortage is real. Take that seriously. The second item is something that you brought up, Shelby, and that's essentially a bidding war for available food. There's essentially four countries that are heavily competing with the United States, which we would be the fifth country, I guess, for the available food, and that's China, Japan, Brazil, and India. China especially, they have had unheard of levels of flooding this past year. You may have seen the Three Gorges Dam is at risk. Approximately a quarter of China's manufacturing is downstream of that dam, which would be wiped out if it broke. But upstream of that is massive flooding, and that's mostly the food production area in China. Now, China cannot support itself when it comes to food normally. They typically import the majority of the food that their citizens eat. They simply have too many people and not enough farmable land.
And a communist government.
A huge importer. Yeah, go ahead, Glenn.
No, and a communist government. That seems to always cause food shortages. I mean, Ukraine. Anyways, not to interrupt you, but that doesn't help being a communist country. It seems that people go hungry often for no real good reason. But anyway, please continue.
Yeah, definitely. There aren't very many fat people in communist countries, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. But China is bidding on everything they can get their hands on. Japan, Brazil, and India are doing the exact same thing. There's been a lot of flooding around the world, a lot of freakish weather around the world this past growing season that's really affected things in a negative way. So there is an ongoing bidding war for all available resources. It's driving prices up, which U.S. farmers love. There's greater profitability there. But it's also highly likely to lead to shortages down the line.
Wow.
If you guys have any comments, hop in, or I'll just keep on moving along.
No, we're listening because
we're taking notes.
You are in this industry, and we're just helping people understand the information that you give out and making sure they hear it and hopefully act on it. So, yeah, keep going, unless Shelby has something.
Well, I was just going to say we have about 3 minutes. So, yeah, let's go on to number three, and I'll kind of jump in if I have to, Dan, to take our break.
Sure. Okay, great. Well, I'll proceed. So number three on my top 10 list is grocery demand always goes up every single year between 20 and 30%. That's the normal increase from summer to winter. This year, it's highly likely that food service, which is normally a third of food consumed in the United States, and food service is highly unlikely to be back.
And food service, just so everyone knows, is like restaurants and like cafeterias and stuff like that. So it's not home cooking. Is that a good summary?
Correct.
Yeah.
That's correct. You can think of food service. This isn't the technical definition, but you can think of food service as food eaten away from home that was not prepared at home, right? So if you take a picnic lunch somewhere, that's not food service. But if you buy food out somewhere and consume it, that's food service. So food service is not going to be back this winter. It's just not. Which means there's going to be another 30% demand on top of the normal 20 to 30% increase that we see in the winter. So you're looking at something like a 60 to 70% increase in demand over the winter.
And one thing,
baseline.
Yeah. And one thing you mentioned in one of the first shows you did with us, and I didn't understand, I'm like, well, food's food. I mean, food service or grocery, you know, what's the difference? Well, we have about 2 minutes, and correct me if I'm wrong. The answer is the way things are packaged, the way things are delivered, the way things are done. There's a big difference between food service and grocery store. If food service might have 55-gallon drums of mayonnaise, I'm making that up, you obviously don't have that in a grocery store. So you can't just switch back and forth between 55-gallon drums and little grocery store things. So they're apples and aardvarks, as my friend Bill used to say. They are different. Grocery store and food service. And we have about a minute before the next break, Shelby.
So, and to add to that, I think it's worth talking about what we talked about in the last show, is that part of the apples and aardvarks thing is that 55-gallon drum, making it up, of mayonnaise. Ha ha, see what I did there?
Yeah.
Now you have to put it into the little containers that have the flip tops that you can't get. We heard about that. We've referenced it a lot of times since then, Dan, is that those flip tops, the packaging that goes to grocery store shelf ready items, there is none in the world. I'm noticing too, and I'm kind of wrapping us up and getting ready to go to the break. I'm noticing a lot of these sealable bags. You know what I mean? They're like plastic bags with like the Ziploc seal on it. Mm-hmm. In other words, things are not in jars. Things are not in containers.
Squeezy bottles.
So I'll let you comment on that when we come back from the break, guys. We have so much more to talk about. We have the rest of the list to go to, and we have a shopping list to make. So don't go away. We have a lot to talk about.
We'll be right back with more of Prepping 2.0 with authors Shelby Gallagher and Glenn Tate right after this.
Shelby Gallagher here. We found that you need to layer your food preps.
Yeah, this is Glenn Tate here. A lot of times the hardest part of layering is the long-term foods. We love Numana foods, which have a 25-year shelf life and are non-GMO. Also, organic meals are available.
Numana comes in family-style portions and in bulk. This is not backpacking food. It's family meals that last for at least 25 years, the perfect freeze-dried part of your food layering.
You can get a sample of Numana meals for $19.95 and see for yourself. You will be amazed.
Prepping 2.0 listeners get a 10% discount by entering the code PREP.
Go to numana.com or click the link on the Prepping 2.0 website.
Give it a try. Numana.com. That is N-U-M-A-N-N-A.com.
When the grid goes down, darkness will descend fast. Used to be there was nothing you could do about an EMP, electromagnetic pulse, or CME, coronal mass ejection. Now you can protect your electronics, protect your family, thanks to EMP Shield. EMP Shield invented a simple-to-install device that prevents whatever's connected to it from frying in an EMP or CME, and it costs just a few $100s. EMP Shield has been tested by independent laboratories and passed muster with the government, which has ordered lots of them. Google EMP Shield and see for yourself. And save some money. Get a $50 discount per device. Go to prepping2-0.com. Click on the Friends and Affiliates page, then click on the EMP Shield logo. At checkout, use coupon code PREPPING2.0. It's all one word.
PrepperNet, where preppers unite. Looking to meet other like-minded people in your area? Looking to start your own prepper group? Already have a group? Join PrepperNet.com. PrepperNet has gathered the biggest names in the industry to help unite preppers everywhere. Join John Jacob Schmidt, Scott Hunt, Dr. Bones and Nurse Amy, Glenn Tate, Shelby Gallagher, Charlie Hogwood, Samuel Culper, Survivor Jane, Rick Austin, Franklin Horton, Ryan Mitchell, and Brian Duff. Our team is united. Check us out at PrepperNet. .com. PrepperNet, where preppers unite. PrepperNet.com.
And we're back with more of Prepping 2.0 with authors Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher.
Welcome back, everyone. This is Shelby Gallagher at Prepping 2.0, segment two. So glad to have you here. We have with us Dan, the food executive guy, and I just kind of gave him a teaser before we went to a break about packaging, but I don't want to interrupt his top 10
don't
list. So
the list flow must continue.
Yes.
So yes, Dan, please flow with your list.
Sure. Yeah. And one note that I wanted to throw out there on that is back in April in episode 77, we talked about how it's an 18 to 24 month transition for all the reasons that people can go back and listen to on that episode to get from food service to retail. And that might not even be possible anymore because of packaging shortages. So just because you're willing to make that leap and maybe you can escalate your timeline to 12 months, there's no packaging to put your new product in. You can't take your, usually we don't see 55 gallon drums of mayonnaise, but
you haven't been to a barbecue at my house.
down to a 12-ounce mayonnaise, but you can't find packaging for it,
right?
Because all the packaging is spoken for, and it's going to be spoken for a long period of time. So that's another caveat to that, why food service manufacturers can't transition easily to retail. But we'll go on to number four. Number four is the usual levels of inventory have been massively depleted. And that's due to a lot of things. That's due to spikes in consumer grocery spending back in the spring. It goes to government stockpiles. It goes to a lot of other things, competition with other countries. So we aren't seeing the sales this summer that we saw in the spring. And that's a normal cycle as well. Summer drops off every single year. But the inventory that distribution centers, warehouses, even manufacturers typically have on hand has been significantly depleted because we saw a sustained period of abnormally high sales. Packaging shortages are making it harder also for manufacturers to catch up to that. And demand is still abnormally high. So there's been a bit of a respite in the industry because demand has dropped a little bit from the spring, but it's not what we need. Everybody is still running their packaging lines, 10 hours more per week than they were, and they're still not catching up. So there's not a lot of built up inventory that can be pushed into the retail grocery market to help supply another spike in demand. That's number four. Number five is we are seeing, and you guys talked about this a little bit on the previous episode, but number five is there is definitely higher levels of government buying taking place. And what we've seen is the government doesn't typically stockpile that much food. I mean, we don't even have a strategic grain reserve anymore, for example. FEMA does stockpile some. State governments occasionally will. We typically set aside several million pounds for, you know, to send overseas for various humanitarian reasons, that type of thing. But those things are kind of a drop in the bucket in the overall market. The government is moving into food storage in a pretty significant way, and it's basically just interjected another competitor besides China and everyone else into the food market that is not typically there. And that's going to drive prices up, and it's going to drive inventories down even further, because we all have limited checkbooks and the government does not.
Right.
So they're going to get what they want out of that, but that's going to lead to further scarcity as we go forward.
Wow.
That's number five.
Wow.
And let's see, number six. I'll move on to number six.
Yeah.
Number six is, in my estimation, and the top analyst that I referenced at the beginning at the research firm, his opinion specifically, is that there's an extraordinarily high probability of further and extensive lockdowns in not just in the U.S., but in other nations, that leads to the same exact supply issues we had back in the spring, but potentially even more so. So in the U.S., if Cleveland locks down, that's going to affect not only the surrounding countryside, it's going to affect distribution into Kentucky and Indiana and other places like that. So even just a city going on lockdown again is going to have a cascading effect to the surrounding areas. We could have states going more significant lockdowns, and we could have nations that we have absolutely no control over going on further lockdowns. It doesn't have to be your area to have an effect on you.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a really, really high probability of that. There's the CDC has already said that the flu season in the winter is going to be really bad. Everyone who gets the flu this winter is going to think they have COVID.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone who gets the flu is going to be sent home by their employers for 2 or 3 weeks because of the COVID scare. That's going to lead to some real issues in manufacturing. I think the bottleneck in manufacturing, and I'm not just referencing protein, but really across the board, is going to be significantly worse over the winter than it was this past spring, because COVID is still going to be in the mix, and you're going to have a significant flu season on top of that.
So I want to put an exclamation mark on what you just said, because, and I don't know, Dan, if you follow our social media, but it drives me crazy when I put out there, hey, look at some empty shelves, and they're like, oh, that's typical. That's just, you know, and I get a naysayer, and that's fine. And I understand that somebody's seeing something differently than I am. And I, you know what, to each his own, I get it. What I want people to hear is that this is the words that you just said, across the board.
Systemic.
You're going to see not just food shortages, packaging shortages everywhere and across the board. And it's going to vary. Like I think I said this in the last show, I can get black beans pretty easily right now. I can get canned, I don't know, Jell-O. I can get most anything I want. You know, I have to look for it maybe. Other places, I can't find chicken. Other people are, beef right now is $20 a pound. I can get beef for $5 a pound, which is $2 more a pound than it was a couple months ago. You know what I mean? So I think we need to realize it's going to be across the board, and it's going to vary somewhat by region because of distribution. So I wanted to stop for a minute and just, can you, and I'm really afraid of taking away from one of your other points, but kind of just put a fine point on that. Cause we get our naysayers out there that, oh, that's just, they're just moving their stock around. Cause this is what I'm seeing in stores. I'm seeing large empty shelves. They're being backfilled with weird stuff. Like we had Jeff Reynolds on our last show.
Yeah.
In his toilet paper section at his store in the middle of Portland, they put firewood to backfill
right,
it to make it look full.
Which we do not recommend to use as toilet paper. We
do
not.
So things like, you know what I mean? And that's what I understand that's what stores need to do to make it look like there's something on the shelves. But That's just not typical. I mean, right. You know what I mean? So I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. And let me paint a mental picture for you that I think will help in this regard. So you could think of the food distribution system, production, manufacturing, distribution, all of it. Think of it as the game of Jenga. You know, where you stack the blocks three across and then you stack three more the other direction and you stack it up. And the point of the game is to see how many blocks you can pull out without collapsing the tower, right? Think of, if you can picture a map of the United States, every state has its own Jenga tower, you know, 50 feet tall. It doesn't matter. Just think of it that way, right? You've got these Jenga towers everywhere. And in Texas, there may be a bean shortage. There's no canned beans. We eat a lot of beans in Texas. So pull that one out. But that doesn't mean it's been pulled out anywhere else. It just means a distribution in Texas, and maybe it's a combination of distribution, supply chain. There's a million reasons, but we have to pull that one out. And then in Washington, there's a shortage of tomatoes. We'll pull that one out. And when you pull that out in enough states, in enough places, you start having real problems. But it's not nearly as cut and dry as people think it is. There's a lot of pieces in this, this food tower. There's a lot of things that have to happen to get every single product you see on the shelf, on that shelf. And there may be shortages, and there may be, you know, towers in certain states that are a lot shakier than other states for a myriad of reasons. So, yeah, when you see a shortage in your area, that's what's going to happen in your area. It might not happen in my area, but it's real in yours. Another caveat to that, moving on from my mental picture there, but another caveat to that is if you're a manufacturer, and my company, we're producers and we're manufacturers. We're in both of those spaces. If our manufacturing is looking like, you know what, we're only going to be able to turn out 70% of what we need to turn out, we are going to say, well, you know what? The chains, the retail grocery chains that we most value, maybe that's for profit motivation. Maybe that's for how many stores they have. We are going to prioritize certain areas and certain chains above others. Mm-hmm. That's just a smart business decision on our part. I'm not going to ship all of my product to, throwing a random state out there, to North Carolina, when I have a 22% margin, when I can ship it to Florida and get a 32% margin. So I'm going to deprioritize, you know, sorry, North Carolina, I'm sending my stuff to Florida, and North Carolina is going to be out. Those decisions are made by thousands of companies all across the country and thousands of distributors, because the distributors can make those decisions too, as to which chain they're going to prioritize, which leads to rolling shortages of various things at various places at various times. And the consumer's never going to know why that's the case.
Right.
It just is. So I hope that maybe lends a little bit of clarity.
Oh, it totally does. Well, and the Jenga, the Jenga thing is helpful, because what I'm seeing is a lot of teetering, almost collapsing Jenga piles in every state, and some are collapsed.
And if I may add to the analogy, so Dan, this is your analogy. I may be getting it wrong, but I, in my mind, was picturing all these Jenga towers in different states. And it seems to me that if you, and I'll just be selfish and look at Washington State because that's where we are. If we pull out enough stuff and the Washington Jenga pile falls over, in my mind, what I see is a bunch of those Washington Jenga pieces flying over the border and starting to knock down the Idaho Tower, maybe starting to knock down the kind of a domino effect. Maybe that's not part of your analogy, but I mean, is that part of your analogy? Could that be a thing where you have cascading failures?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Because if you can't get product X that is a staple in Washington, you're going to try to find another way to get that product. Maybe you're ordering it through Walmart.com or Amazon or who knows what, right? You're going to try to find that product. So when there's a shortage in one area, it directly affects the supply in other areas. People are going to be trying to find that product or that item any way they can get their hands on it. We were doing that personally. We were doing that with yeast back in the spring. I couldn't get yeast at any store anywhere. I was buying yeast on eBay.
Don't know what you're getting.
People are going to find everything they can find, and it does have a cascading effect. And using the same analogy, you know, the firewood in the toilet paper section. there, what they did is they took a Jenga piece labeled firewood and they're propping up their tower with it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they're doing. And maybe you have 18 varieties of beans, but no tomatoes, when before you only had 10 varieties of beans. Well, they're taking those extra beans, Jenga pieces, and they're propping up their tower. That's right. What they're doing.
And another part of this, and this may not be your thoughts, Dan, so I want to be clear, this isn't necessarily your thoughts, but I'm curious what you think. I view the world in a political lens and not like partisan, but like people and all that, you know, getting together and trying to mess up other people, you know, the majority trying to mess up the minority. I wonder, open question, curious what your thoughts are, if politics couldn't play a factor in this. For example, I'm sitting here again thinking about Washington State. If I am the distributor you're mentioning or the manufacturer, I'm going to send stuff where the money is. And where the money is a downtown Seattle grocery store with a bunch of Amazon workers who all make six figures as like minimum wage. The food prices are going to be higher. And if I were the communist governor of Washington State, hypothetically speaking, I would say, you know what, grocery store, I would really appreciate it. I want you to be a team player here with the state of Washington, which regulates every aspect of your life and can snuff you out in a business sense in 10 seconds. I'd really like Seattle to get priority for stuff. And you know all those hillbillies out in the country in eastern Washington and rural Washington? I think they're not going to get as much stuff. I know that sounds like tyrannical and crazy. And if you think it is, that's cool. But I mean, could politics play a factor in this?
Yeah, it certainly could. Politics can play a factor in something like that. Generally, it's not going to be nearly as much of a factor as a profit motivation.
Exactly.
But yes, it could play a factor. Now, for my company, for example, we haven't run into any scenarios like that.
Right.
But I'm not going to say that it's outside the realm of possibility. The difference is that if in, you know, Boondocks, Washington, my profit motivation is greater than it is in downtown Seattle, then
the
I really don't care what they say. I'm going to sell to where I make the most profit.
Yeah.
So there is that factor too. But if there's a greater profit motivation in downtown Seattle, then most companies are going to go with that. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is capitalism, right?
Where
most companies are going to go where the money is.
Mm-hmm. So. Great. Thank you.
Wow. Yep. Okay.
Keep going. This is fantastic.
I think we're on to number 7. This is awesome.
Okay. Number 7 is the increasing likelihood. And this is pulling politics in. Feel like that, Glenn. The increasing likelihood of continued and significant civil unrest.
Yeah.
Right now, there hasn't been a lot of, I have not seen, and I don't really know of any other company that's seen significant issues that you can directly tie to civil unrest. Typically, the unrest rolls through most often on weekends, not in Portland. Apparently, every day is a weekend in Portland.
Right.
But in most cities, the civil unrest is a weekend thing. It's a after hours thing. And then you get back to work Monday morning. The roads are already cleared of debris. No big deal, right? But as things continue to escalate, as the unrest escalates, especially after the election, which is such a huge wild card in all of this, you could see unrest to the extent that it affects transport, processing, and warehousing. Generally speaking, warehousing, processing, et cetera, anything really related to the food industry is very rarely in downtown areas.
Yeah.
It's too expensive anyway. Mm-hmm. You can't put a warehouse downtown. So it's on the outskirts. It's towards the suburbs, but close to the interstate. That's essentially where all of your distribution centers are. They want to be at the intersection of two interstates or very close to it, near a major city. But as this unrest continues, and especially if we see the general strike that's being heavily promoted over the winter where workers just don't show up, there's a lot of potential there down the line that you could see, I'm going to say, regional shortages, potentially severe regional shortages based on civil unrest. That is a bit of a wild card, but it is something that you have to take into consideration. And that does go back to, I would strongly encourage the prepping 2.0ers, you got going beyond skin deep and saying, well, the food gets at the grocery store somehow. Figure out how, where are the distribution centers that are feeding your store that you go to? Where are they? Figure that out. Mm-hmm. And if you see, you know, if you're outside of Louisville, Kentucky, for example, and you see there's significant civil unrest in Louisville, if you already know where your food distribution centers are, you can kind of project into the future a little bit what the issues might be in your area before your neighbors have any idea there's a problem. If a distribution center goes up in smoke and you know it first, you're way ahead of the game. Well, so I would encourage people to do your Ford Observer, Sam Culper area study and include the food supply chain in your area in that. Because civil unrest, it strikes anywhere it wants to, and you're not going to know where it's going to strike until it does. Kenosha, Wisconsin was not on anybody's radar until a week ago.
Are we going to have cheese shortages? No, I'm just kidding.
Well, and you're highlighting a point that I think I said at the beginning of 2020.
You did.
Oh my gosh. I said Antifa was going to grow into other states. Boy, was I right. And not just be a Pacific Northwest thing. Here's what I want people to note, that even in the couple of weeks since we have talked to you, because we asked you that question a couple of weeks ago, Dan, and you're like, I don't see that happening, but it doesn't say it wouldn't happen. Well, now it's on your list. It is spreading. And not only that, what I'm seeing too is Antifa BLM types, rioters, ground war idiots, and, you know, agitators. They are now no longer staying in the downtown areas, as you said. They are spreading out to neighborhoods. They are spreading. They are now specifically targeting law enforcement, and they are, they're looking to cause the most chaos. I just did a show on our KHNC show this last Friday honestly, George Soros's plan to cause this chaos and all the history, the communist history that he has. So I really encourage people to just take what you're seeing now and not just, you know, oh, look at what happened in Kenosha and it's what is continuing to happen in Kenosha. But spread. This is why we write great fiction, right, Glenn? Spread it. Mm-hmm. Like, let's take it. Let's
project it outward.
Project it out worse. Well, projecting it out worse means distribution centers get lit on fire with Molotov cocktails. And you also have to take out, and we were just talking to Sean Swanson about this a couple days ago, take what the Antifa BLM types don't have any rules of engagement. They're going to be creative in their chaos. There's not going to be a, well, that would be rude to break
Geneva
the window.
Convention.
You know, it's not right to
prohibition on clubbing guys with a skateboard. Pretty sure. Yeah, that's
right.
Not a thing.
There's no rules. In fact, they're like that's where they thrive. So yeah, the thought of them torching a distribution center to cause the most chaos. Yeah, I could totally see that. And now watch, in about 2 months, we're going to see it. I'm not joking. It's going to happen. Mm-hmm. So I totally agree with you on that one. And I got to look at our clock here. We have just a couple more minutes. We might actually get through this 10 here, your top 10. Yeah, we have about a minute and a half and we have to wind down. So let's hit number 8 there with you.
Hit number 8 and we'll wind it up for the regular show and continue it in the after show.
Okay, great. So number 8 is the Consumer Price Index is doing some crazy things.
Yeah.
It's going up. Prices are going up. It's on a fairly strong upward trajectory. And what happens, what a lot of people don't understand with the Consumer Price Index is what happens when the price index goes up is it does lead to shortages. And let me explain why. When things start getting expensive, when that barbecue sauce that you used to spend $4.50 for is now $7, you're going to buy something instead. You're going to supplement. Well, I'm going to buy this cheaper barbecue sauce, or maybe I'm going to try to make my own and buy different ingredients. People are still going to buy approximately the same amount of food. They're just going to buy less expensive food. So when the consumer price index starts creeping up, you often see shortages in your staples, flour, sugar, pasta, etc. You see raw ingredients become really, really scarce. So you may have a grocery store that's completely full of high-end barbecue sauce that wasn't so high-end 6 months ago, but you can't find pasta to save your life. or you can't find ketchup. Maybe people buy ketchup instead, right? So when the consumer price index goes up, not only does it have a direct effect on people's purchasing decisions, which leads to shortages in less expensive foods, canned goods, et cetera, but what it does is it really harms the manufacturers, because the manufacturers have to raise prices based on outside influences. That's not necessarily profit. Typically, when prices are forced to go up, manufacturers have to take a lesser profit margin. If I'm selling a product for $10 and external forces are making me raise that price to $15, I can't increase my margins. I probably have to reduce them because I'm afraid that I'm driving my customers away. Mm-hmm. I was selling X amount of units. Now I'm selling 30% less because of these external forces. Suddenly, I have to take a lesser margin to try to absorb some of the hit to consumers. Companies go out of business when the CPI gets out of whack. So there's an upstream and a downstream negative effect to supply when the consumer price index starts to rise. And it, believe me, Google it after the show. The consumer price index in food is not doing good things.
Wow. Whew, well, we only have about a minute left. What
kind of absorb this a little bit.
Yeah, take a moment and take a deep breath.
Digest it, if you will.
And I just want to, again, remind people, you can join us for more in the after show. We're going to just continue this conversation. We're going to finish Dan's list, available to Patreons only, and you can check that out at prepping2-0.com. Take a deep breath. This is, boy, these words sink in a lot right now. We always like to end our show with the words from Benjamin Franklin, who said, "Failure to prepare is preparing to fail." Folks, have a great week. Be sure to prep, and we'll catch you in the after show.
Adios, y'all.
You've been listening to Prepping 2.0 with authors Shelby Gallagher and Glenn Tate. All of the fun and easy prepping information heard on this podcast can be found online at prepping2-0.com. You can also find out more about Glenn's books online at 299days.com and about Shelby's books online at agreatstate.com. Until next time, be smart, be safe, and be prepared.